Yes, that's right. This is another edition of My Car Guru. It is a limited double platinum edition. It's layered in 10 microns of genuine simulated gold tone and encrusted with like 14 carats of genuine diamels. You remember those commercials? You know, where you could like get a watch that was layered. I don't even know what 10 microns is. It sounds really thin, though. But anyway, this one is limited because this is the day of infamy, the day that I actually turn 65 years old. Yes, I know that it's really hard to believe that since I sound so youthful and exuberant, but it's true. I was born November 17th, 1956. My dad was driving a two-door 56 Chevrolet. My mom didn't have a car. We lived in Princeton. Well, that's where the house was. I had never been there. Bridgeport. That's right. My brother was born in Princeton. We lived in Bridgeport, West Virginia, which is outside of Clarksville. So now I know you know exactly where that is. But I was born at Thomas Memorial Hospital in South Charleston, West Virginia. I've always referred to that as the armpit of the world. It's really not that bad. It's just there's a lot of industry there, a lot less than there used to be. Union Carbide is right beside Monsanto, which is right beside DuPont. And I remember growing up, they used to talk about the dirtiest rivers in the world. Well, the Kanawha River that flows through the heart of the capital of Charleston and all the way past all those plants, at that point was the third most polluted river in the world. So that's pretty bad. I think they've cleaned it up some now. You know, think about wild and wonderful West Virginia. Well, it wasn't that wild and wonderful then. But anyway, I digress. I was born at Thomas Memorial Hospital. My grandfather was there. The doctor that delivered me was apparently wearing a tuxedo. I had interrupted some type of important party. I think I was born at like 10 p.m., something like that. So now that you know all that, how does that help you? Well, it probably doesn't. But it does help us to know each other a little bit better. You know, I want to get to know you. You know, one of the most... Well, I guess the biggest blessing of this radio show to me has been the people that I have met as a result of it. The folks that have come down and bought cars, or they've come down just to talk, or I've been able to help them in some way on a personal level with a vehicle situation. I've been able to witness my faith, my, you know, talk about tragedy and things that we have dealt with in our lives, and maybe that has helped somebody else. That is a what more can you ask for than to be able to do that, to be able to shine a little bit of light in somebody else's life and make a difference? If I have been able to do that for anybody, then my purpose has been fulfilled. But anyway, today is November 17th. I don't know what's going on this evening. I asked my wife for some new underwear. It's been 8 years, so I think it's time. No, I'm just kidding. No, what I really wanted was one of those rolling stools that you can sit on and it has wheels on it, and I can roll around my car when I'm cleaning my wheels and just doing other things on the car. Because as I've gotten older, it's harder to bend over. Is that unusual? You know, my back is just not as flexible, and I like to sit instead of getting on my knees because it makes my knees hurt. And also, I can't keep track of anything. So when it comes to tools and things like that, so it's got little slots where you can put tools and all kinds of stuff. So I don't want one of those creeper things, you know, where you lay down on your back and get under the car, because I've got people that can do that. One advantage of being a car dealer is that you got people that can work on cars for you. And when you love cars, and you especially love old cars like I do, then that is a very handy situation, as long as you don't go broke doing it. So far, I have not. But anyway, this little creeper thing is, or not creeper thing, this rolling stool is something that I thought would be handy. What else do you ask for? You know, I've got grandkids. I don't need any more of them. I'll take some more. but I don't need any more of them. But it's funny, the little boys, I've got four boys and one girl, and the boys all love cars at this point, so they're going to drive some women crazy for sure. But we are going to talk about cars today. We're going to talk about some myths. You know what myths are, don't you? Things that we thought were true and they're probably not. I'm reading a fascinating book right now, speaking of myths. It's about, now I know this sounds boring, so don't judge me. It's called The Writing of the Gods, and it is about how they figured out what hieroglyphics said. Now, I don't know about you. Some of you, I'm sure, have been to Egypt. And I would be willing to commit that most of you have seen a pyramid and, you know, have heard of all of that stuff. All that writing, you know, that's all over those things is called hieroglyphics. And, you know, they still wouldn't know what those symbols and all those things say if they hadn't discovered the Rosetta Stone. And I may have mentioned this the other day. I'm just kind of really captivated by this. The Rosetta Stone was a rock that had a flat rock, and it had inscriptions on it in three different languages. And it was discovered back in the early 1800s, I believe. And was discovered when Napoleon and his group decided to invade. They said, "Well, let's go invade somebody. We need to capture somebody." And so they said, "Let's go after Egypt." So they went after Egypt, and while it was a disaster, but while they were there, they were redoing this fort, and they found this, or an enterprising young man found this stone, and on that stone it had hieroglyphics. It had Coptic language, which is nobody knew how to read it either. And then they had Greek. And so that's how they were able to eventually, or that was the tool that they used to be able to understand that. Now, to many people who are not familiar with cars and not familiar with car lingo, you know, sometimes the stuff that the a car salesman says about a particular car, about horsepower and, you know, whether it has dual overhead camshafts or, you know, multi-point fuel injection. All of this stuff could be like reading hieroglyphics. There's a lot of myths about the car business, about, you know, how much profit, for example, is there in a car. When a dealer sells one for MSRP, a lot of people say, well, you know, if you're paying $100,000 for a car, well, the dealer's got to be making, what, $25,000? And nothing could be further from the truth. It's just the margins used to be. I mean, when my dad first got into the car business, that was my first awareness of margins. Made about 17% if you sold something for MSRP, unless it was a Corvette. I think Corvettes were like 21, 22% today. If a dealer makes 6% versus from the invoice price to MSRP is about 6%. It's not much. Now, in terms of dollars, it sounds like a lot. You know, if a car's marked up, you know, $2,500, you say, well, you're not making that much on me. But, you know, you think about the investment, it's not much when it comes to margin. A lot of myths out there about cars and maintenance and things like that. And I want to try to bust some of those here in just a minute. And we'll get started on that in just a few minutes here. See, that was a quick few minutes. It's not like watching Yellowstone. You know, they say on Yellowstone, you ever watch that new with Kevin Costner? Love that show. It's a great show. But my goodness, the commercials. Admitted, some of those commercials are mine, but mine are only 30 seconds long out of a 10-minute break, and they take a break like every 3 minutes. It is ridiculous, but that's just the way it is. They got to make that money, so we do short breaks. So anyway, car care tips, myths versus reality. Oh, boy. You know, tires. Let's just get into tires. I've had people say, well, how much air pressure should be in my tires? And I said, well, Have you read your owner's manual? No, I don't read the owner's manual. Okay, have you looked at the sticker in the door jamb, which gives you your tire pressures? No, I didn't know there was a sticker in the door jamb. See, a good salesperson would have pointed that out. But if, you know, and sometimes the service advisors at a car dealership will help to overcome the deficiencies of a, I started to use a dirty word, a bad salesperson, somebody who doesn't know their product and doesn't really have time because he's too busy extracting money from your wallet. So you just have to be careful about that. Trust the service advisor. He's going to tell you what you need to do. But the tire pressure is not based on what's on the sidewall of the tire. It's based on what the recommended pressures are from the manufacturer. Because engineers designed this car, and those same engineers tuned the suspension to a certain level of tire pressure. Now, what happens if you change the type of brand of tires? It doesn't change a thing. But if you do change the size of tires or the number of plies in the tire, then that can affect the tire pressure. Now, there are tire pressure sensors in your wheels. And had a lady drive in yesterday into the service drive. None of my service advisors had gotten to her yet, but I did. And I said, how can I help you? And she said, well, and she had the most beautiful accent. She must have been from Eastern Europe, or is it Western Europe? Eastern Europe. And because he sounded like Russian or something like that. But anyway, we had a nice little conversation. And she said, my tire pressure warning light came on. And when I went through the Jiffy Lube place or something like, I call them all Jiffy Lube places, kind of like I call them Kleenex instead of tissue. You know, I'm using a brand name for a generic term. Don't do that. But she said they checked it and they said that her tire pressures were fine. And so she drove along, light went off for a little bit, came back on. So she comes into the nearest new car dealer, which happened to be me. She's driving a Honda, but the Honda is under warranty. And I said, ma'am, I'll be glad to check that for you. So we pulled it around, and her tire pressures were correct. We looked in the on the door jamb, and it says what they were supposed to be, but her light was still on. So what is the problem? Well, the problem is one of the tire pressure sensors is probably bad. The first question I ask somebody if I see this, I said, have you had your tires changed recently? Because sometimes, folks, the people who change the tires at the tire store will damage the tire pressure sensors. And those aren't, in some cases, they're very expensive. And if they do, who's responsible for that? Well, it depends on what the paperwork says that you signed when you bought your tires from them. It may say, we are not responsible if we damage your tire pressure sensor. A lot of them do that because, folks, there's not much margin in tires either. And if they damage a tire pressure sensor, or if you've got one that's defective, and you're going to blame them, right, if the light comes on, then, you know, all of a sudden they went from making money on tires to losing money. So those sensors will get damaged, and that happens typically when you're changing tires. But hers is a different situation. I said, when did you buy the vehicle? And she told me. I said, well, you're under warranty. Oh, that's good. But I have to go to Johnson City because it's a Honda. And I said, well, you go to Johnson City or Morristown, but you do need to take it to a Honda dealer, and they'll probably take care of that for you. So anyway, that is one myth that we've talked way too much about. Let's get to another one. If regular grade fuel is good, then premium fuel must be better, right? Well, most vehicles are designed to run just fine on regular grade octane fuel. That's 87 octane. Filling up with a higher grade is a waste of money. A higher octane doesn't mean that your vehicle is going to perform any better. Now, the opposite is not true. If your vehicle is designed to run on premium fuel, you need to run premium fuel because the engine is designed differently. We won't get into all the details, but it's about the compression ratio in your engine. And if you run low-octane gas in a high-octane engine, or an engine that requires high-octane, you will do damage to that engine. So, but don't spoil your car. It's not going to run any better. There are some people say, well, I get better gas mileage when I run it on higher octane. Kind of doubt it. Okay, Don't worry about replacing tires until they're down to the minimum tread depth. Is that a myth? I mean, is 2/32 of an inch? Go get a ruler. Look at 2/32 of an inch. You think that's enough to ride on? Well, that's where the tread wear indicators are on your tires, and that's where the manufacturer of the tires says that your tires are officially worn out. Now, rarely do tires wear out evenly across the tread. You know, you may have, I don't know, 6/32 on one side and 1/32 on the other, or bald with steel cords sticking out on the other side. But if they're wearing evenly, and then you're going to have a situation at 2/32 where you're going to start slipping and sliding, especially when it gets a little slick, when there's rain. Hydroplaning is also a problem. Don't wait till it gets to 2/32. And why don't they just call it 1/16? I don't know. But 2/32 of an inch is not much. I recommend when that worn out is at 4/32 of an inch. And they still have a little bit of grip, but it gives you a little time to shop around and get the best tire and price and stuff like that. So definitely start looking at 4/32 of an inch, but also turn your front wheel front tires to the left. Get out of your car, go look at the inside of your wear of your tires, and go look on the other side as well. Turn it to the right. Check the inside, because sometimes the inside will wear faster than the outside, and you may have tires that are bald on the inside, and you don't know it. Here's another myth. You should let your car warm up for several minutes before driving. That's debatable. You know, on modern engines, they warm up more quickly when you just jump in. And with these thin oils that we have, you can jump in, fire it up, and take off. I recommend at least 30 seconds. Just count to 30. That's not too long to wait. Older cars, they won't run good until they warm up. I know that's this Mustang I have has a carburetor on it and an old-fashioned choke, and if you take off on that thing when it's cold, you're going to be miserable because you're going to have coffee in your lap. So, you know, I believe in letting cars warm up for at least 30 seconds to a minute. Don't rev your engine really hard or run it hard for the first few miles while it's warming up. Because, you know, if especially if you plan on keeping your car a long time, if you're going to trade every year or two, you're not going to, you'll never know the difference. It'll be somebody else's problem. Now, that's a bad way to think, isn't it? Another myth, dealership must perform your car's regular maintenance to keep your warranty valid. Is that true? If you take your car, it's under warranty, and you have somebody else change your oil on a regular basis, or you change it at home, is that going to invalidate your warranty if you have a warranty claim? No, it will not invalidate your warranty. However, if you don't keep records, you could have a problem, especially if you have a major engine failure. They're going to want to see oil changes just to make sure that you were servicing the vehicle. Gosh, it's so important, folks. Just change your oil at least every 5,000 miles. Now, modern cars, you don't have to change it every 5,000. You can go 7,500. Under ideal circumstances, no dust, dirt, not a lot of weather fluctuations, temperature fluctuations, but that doesn't sound like East Tennessee to me, or Western North Carolina, or Southwest Virginia. I don't want to leave anybody out, or Eastern Kentucky, or Northern Georgia. Well, maybe Georgia. But, you know, we have a lot of dust and dirt and temperature fluctuations, and I just think it's so much easier to remember, change your oil every 5,000 miles and rotate your tires every time as well. And if you do that, then you'll be good. But you need to check your oil about every 1,000 miles. Just open the hood. It won't kill you. You know, pull the dipstick out. Take a look at it. Make sure it's got some oil on it. Don't check it after it's warm either. Let it be cold. But don't just pull the dipstick out and look at it when it's cold, because oil will migrate up that little dipstick and fool you. So you got to wipe it off, stick it back in the tube, then pull it out. Make sure the car's not running. And see where the mark is. If it's gone down some, don't panic, because some newer cars will use a little bit of oil. I remember when the Mazdas first came out, Mazda RX-7, they said from the factory it's going to use it's going to use a quart every 1,000 miles, and people were freaking out. We told them, I mean, that's just the way the engine is designed. But, you know, if you have a car that's after 5,000 miles and it's used 2 quarts of oil, you got a problem. and you need to be talking to them about some type of a warranty solution to that little problem. But no, you can service your own car. You can take it to Jiffy Lube. I always recommend, while it's under warranty, use factory filters, okay? And just keep a receipt. Just water it up in your glove box, whatever. Put it in a book. Take notes. You know, write down when you get your car serviced, the miles, the date, the miles, and what kind of oil you put in it. And always use the recommended oil. If it says use 10W-40, use 10W-40. You know, 2050, something that they even do zero weight oils now. So that's important. We'll take our last break, and we'll be back in just a minute. Okay, so the last myth here is it important to winterize or summarize your car? The answer to that is not really. There isn't anything special that you need to do to your car when the seasons change. But a lot of car dealers and advertisers will say, well, you got to winterize your car. No, you have to winterize your camper, or you know, you'll destroy your plumbing system in your camper. Get the, you know, you got to put that antifreeze stuff in it, but your car's got antifreeze in it. You know, typical long life coolant will last up to 100,000 miles, but check your owner's manual to see what the manufacturer recommends. I mean, I recommend when it gets cold or going into winter, change your wiper blades, you know, because you're going to need them, and then change them again when summer. Make sure your coolant level of protection is adequate. You know, they can test your coolant. Make sure your oil is fresh. You got good tread depth. And, you know, a lot of transmissions are non-serviceable anymore, so there's not much to do there. Oh, yeah, make sure you have enough windshield washer solvent, and then you'll be good. A lot of people put Vaseline or something like that on their weather stripping around the edges of their window. Don't coat it on there. Just put a little bit. A little WD-40. Sometimes just squirt it on your finger. Don't just go indiscriminately spraying it all over the place. You'll be sorry you did that. But there's stuff that you can do to make your windows not stick, you know, when they're going down. And that's one thing that will that'll burn up a windshield. A window motor. If you try to roll down a power window and it's stuck, you could burn one up in a hurry. Still be covered under warranty if you're under warranty. But if you're not, you out of luck. So that's just something a couple myths that really aren't true out there that you can pay a little bit of attention to and prevent a lot of problems down the road. Also get you a good set of jumper cables. Keep them in your car. Not those little skinny things that are free, you know, that you get when you go to the dollar store or something like that, or somebody hands you some free jumper cables. Just pitch them. Go to Advance Auto Parts or Sears or someplace. Is Sears still open? Go someplace and get you some nice thick cables, because those will start your car on a really, really cold morning and make a big difference. So that's just a little bit of advice from the car guru. Thanks for listening, and we will see you tomorrow, I hope.